With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better. And welcome to part two of this week's Oscar season clash. So on Monday, we talked Best Picture winner Dances with Wolves, and today we're damned well going to open Pandora's box as we talk 2009's Avatar.
The concept is to drive these remotely controlled bodies called avatars. They're grown from human DNA mixed with DNA of the natives.
Marine in an avatar body. That's a potent mix.
You get me what I need, I'll see to it you get your legs, babe. Your real legs.
Hell yeah, sir.
Looks like you. This is your avatar.
Just relax and let your mind go blank. It shouldn't be hard for you.
We'll have a winner at the end of the show, but which film will it be? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Putters. Pandora will shit you out dead. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Compton.
I'm Chris Tilly, and I'm crying.
All right, then. Very quickly, as I always ask at the start of part two of our weekly shows, if you haven't subscribed to us, if you would be kind enough to do that on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, it would be massively appreciated by the three of us. And if you're able to give us a little rating and review, that would be even more appreciated. And if you do leave us a review, there's every chance Chris Tilly, a.k.a. Chris Thrilly, will read it out, which sounds a bit like this.
This review comes from Guna Love.
I think that's maybe an Arsenal reference. Gunalove says, this is by far my favourite pod, and I love me a podcast. It's hilarious and the chemistry between the hosts is brilliant. You feel more like you are listening in on a lively and maybe drunken pub chat about movies. I also give Chris Thrilly 6 stars because he is the one that reads these reviews and decides which should be read on air. That is an excellent review, Gunalove. I'm giving you 5 stars.
Oh, thank you, Gunalove. Right then, part two of Dances with Wolves versus Avatar. They were Chris's choices this week. Chris, remind us why.
Because I sent you a bunch and you liked this one.
Great. Now, on Monday, Victoria said, we need to talk about Kevin, which means today I'll be feeling blue as I whisk you off to Pandora. Let me take you on a journey. Neytiri is a Na'vi of a curious nature who lives in a picturesque rainforest free from human pollution called Fern Gully. I just swapped out the words on the Fern Gully entry on Wikipedia. It's insane. It really works. Okay. Fern Gully also, just as a matter of fact, features the voice of Tim Curry. And that completes this week's obligatory Tim Curry reference. It's all go. All right, let me take you on a journey properly. Dear Clash Potter, this synopsis is best imagined being read in 3D. Paraplegic former Marine Jake Sully finds himself with a one-way ticket to Pandora to join the Avatar program, where he becomes a 9-foot blue alien called Jake Sully. Once on Pandora, Jake Sully becomes a right devious little shit, pretending to be mates with the scientists while working for the military before finally screwing them both over so he can get his end away with Neytiri, another 9-foot-tall blue alien, whose best quality is being incredibly forgiving, seeing as Jake Sully managed to get her father killed in the process of quite literally chasing tail. Anyway, in the end, there's a big fight, which Jake Sully was definitely going to lose until the spirit goddess of Pandora, Enya, helps out.
Sorry.
Helps out with an army of animals, which you kind of figure she could have done earlier and a lot less Na'vi would be dead. To play us out, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Leona Lewis. For your consideration, that's Avatar. Excellent.
That's a very good intro, Alex.
Right then, let's talk histories with this movie. We'll do you, Victoria, first.
I went to the cinema to see this film and I was really excited. But as you both know, I have got a lazy eye, right? Mm-hmm. So this is the first 3D film I went to see. And I just thought it might work. But what I'd failed to remember is that magic eye posters don't work for me. I can't do them at all. So the 90s were pretty tough because I had to spend a lot of time pretending that I can see a dolphin when I can't see a dolphin. Yes, it's jumping over a rainbow. I don't fucking know. But the social
pressure. For the whole
pressure,
decade?
More or less, yeah. Can you see that dolphin? Can you see the waterfall? Nope, can't. And people can't believe that I can't see it. And I don't want to display my lazy eye in the 90s because I was a teenager and that's not a great time for me to be doing that.
Do you still have a lazy eye?
Yeah, it didn't get fixed. So it's, you've seen me
I've
quite
never,
drunk.
It only happens because, sister and brother in arms here. I have a lazy eye as well, but I had an operation when I was 6 years old where they popped my eye out and had a fiddle with the muscles. Ugh. And fixed it, semi-fixed it. So when I get really, really tired, it still happens to me too.
Yeah, when I'm very, very, very tired, very, very, very drunk, it starts to wander, which is so sexy, I found. Doesn't put anyone off. But yeah, it didn't get fixed because I was just on a waiting list forever because it was the 80s. And so then it was too late. It's a bit of a sad story, actually. It's
so
not really,
wait,
I'm not bothered.
Were you not able, so explain how that works. Could you see this in 3D or not?
No, not at all. So I was really disappointed. And then, so when I was watching it, I was like, right, shit, it's not going to work. That's a shame. Everyone else seems to be having a great time. So I was really watching it for the story, which was not the best possible experience at the time. And then I just thought, oh, maybe I've just not fallen head over heels with it because I can't see it in 3D. But I don't know if that's true. I don't know. Who's seen it in 3D? Is it amazing or not?
Yeah, I don't want to open the next sentence with this. This is a movie you have to see in 3D.
It's so unfair.
Wow. This is going to be interesting then, because you're going to be coming at this from a very different angle. I mean, we're all going to be talking about the story compared to the 3D, but the 3D is kind of important. Chris, tell me your history with the film.
Just having to write about it a lot and think about it a lot and talk about it a lot. You know, this was such a huge release back when I was working at IGN, and our parent company was Fox. And I remember there was a lot of, there was at the time Fox owned IGN. There was a lot of fear that this wasn't going to do well. You could hear it from the sort of the upper echelons of the company, that there was a lot riding on Avatar being a success. So yeah, I went to the States. I went to a film festival, interviewed John Landau, the producer, about it a couple of years before. And then I sent you a video, you guys, of the day I went to Avatar Day. Mm-hmm. August 31st, 2009, where everyone could go and see 15 minutes of Avatar for free all over the world, basically, to try and get people on board, which was good timing because the trailer had come out the day before and everyone said it was basically Dances with Smurfs. that's my memory. Saw it at the cinema and was very impressed with it visually. You know, you've got to see it in 3D, that's for sure. and haven't given it much of a thought ever since, even though obviously there's been theme parks, there's a theme park opened and there's sequels getting made, but it's not stayed in my consciousness, which I think is quite a common thing with Avatar.
Yeah, I mean, my story is not dissimilar to yours. The parent company of the company I was working for was also 20th Century Fox. So you're absolutely right. I mean, they've never really released exactly how much this cost them. There's estimates, but it's probably close to $500 million is what they put into Avatar. So there was a real tension behind this movie, which actually translated really well for film journalists because you were glad-handed like crazy. It was like, come to this. Hey, do you want this? What's this? Look at this. It's Avatar. Isn't this cool? So I saw at the Fox screening room in Soho Square a really early 15 minutes in 3D, and it genuinely blew my mind. And then I watched your video, Chris, that you sent through about Avatar Day, which is great. I hope you're going to post that on our Twitter at ClashPod because
Unlikely.
It's very, very entertaining. But it's you and your then boss, Alex, so a lot like now, said, I really like the bioluminescence stuff. And you said you didn't like that. Are you nuts? That was the best bit of the preview footage in 3D, the stuff where Pandora's Forest lights up at night. I couldn't believe that. I was as angry with you, little baby Chris, in the video in 2009 as I am now.
I haven't watched the video to the end because I find it too cringeworthy. But I feel like I thought the nighttime stuff, I felt like I was watching a cartoon, whereas the daytime stuff, I felt like I was watching a sort of cool CG world being built. I don't know. That was my thinking at the time.
Yeah. Well, I flew to LA as well to interview James Cameron on the Fox lot. It was the first time I'd ever met him. He was very cool. He was a bit scary, but he liked me after I started vomiting words about Aliens being the greatest sci-fi movie ever. Then visited his office, played with loads of props.
Sorry, didn't he say to you, no, Aliens better, but Aliens is very good?
No, he didn't, actually. Okay. He was like, I agree. And if you ever do it on a Clash Pod in future, which is an idea I've just come up with for a podcast you guys should do, it's going to be Aliens that should win. But yeah, came back, hosted the premiere. So Avatar was a big part of my life. And watched the movie in 3D. And in 3D, Victoria, it is incredible. Absolutely incredible. Watched it about 5 years ago on TV, not in 3D. And I was like, this is rubbish. And I think maybe because the bar had been lowered so much, when I watched it again for this show, which is only the third time I've watched it, I've really enjoyed it a lot more than I was expecting. So shall we talk a little bit about the history of this movie? I hope so, because there's quite a lot to talk about.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Let's open Pandora's box.
You are so taken with that, aren't you?
I love
it. Is it because it's a bit rude?
Oh,
1994 is when James Cameron wrote his first 80-page treatment for Avatar with the intention of making it straight after he finished working on Titanic. And he says he was inspired by every single science fiction book he'd ever read. And as well as that, and I think this influence is clear, the adventure novels of Edgar Rice Burroughs. I had not ever drawn the dots until this show between Avatar and John Carter. And you can imagine now what high hopes Disney must have had for John Carter. It's still, just as a little aside, it's still my favourite story about how studio thinking works, John Carter, because obviously it's based on the Edgar Rice Burroughs novel, The Princess of Mars. And the studio were like, teenage boys are not going to come and see a movie with princess in the title, so we're going to call it John Carter of Mars. And then they went, a lot of movies about Mars flop, so let's drop the of Mars. And that's how it ended up. A fucking movie, a sci-fi movie set on Mars called John Carter. It's like the most ridiculous thing in the world. It's like, it could be, I remember first hearing John Carter and going, was it some sort of legal drama? I couldn't believe it. Right. Also influencing Cameron, certainly because he's a massive fan of the manga, and I'm assuming the anime too, Ghost in the Shell. So according to JC, he began working on preliminary drafts of his movie in the mid-90s. He'd also watched an animated film, Pocahontas, and he loved the idea of a soldier falling in love with the native daughter of his enemy. This was set, this movie, to be released in 1999, this version of Avatar, with a budget of $100 million. So 10 years earlier and about $400 million less than it was eventually released. There is obviously a problem at this point, which is that Cameron decides the technology wasn't ready yet there to fulfill his vision for Avatar. So he went off to make his documentaries Under the Sea and Wait. And that is the common story. I think, and this is just a guess, but I also think he was setting up his next gig in case Titanic was a flop. And the minute Titanic wasn't a flop, because everyone was talking about Titanic being a flop at that point, and the minute it wasn't a flop, and it not only isn't a flop, but goes on to, you know, set the equal the record for number of Oscars won and be the highest grossing film in history, you probably go, I'll take a break now. I'll take some time off, rest on my laurels. Don't you think that was that had something to do with it?
I never thought about it that way. I mean, he does seem like someone who isn't that bothered about cinema. He wants to push the it forward as an art form, but also he wants to do what he is interested in other things. He's interested in history and science and biology, and so I think he's more passionate about those projects underwater than he is about making movies.
Yeah. All goes quiet on the Avatar front until 2006, when he says that what Weta did with Gollum and King Kong, the technology has caught up to his vision, which mainly means we're not going to get the infamous dead eye look that happened with motion capture / performance capture. I learned the term uncanny valley in this research, which I've never heard before. Isn't it great?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with Uncanny Valley, it's roboticists and animators talk about it. It's the negative effect that is created in an audience when something approaches human in appearance but isn't quite there. It creates this creepiness. For reference, see The Polar Express.
Yeah, but it's why like Wall-E works, but The Polar Express doesn't. Because if you drew a little smiley face, a human being can try and attach some sort of emotion to it, but then you go too far and, yeah, you look dead and it freaks us out.
No one's getting on that train, Tom Hanks. No one. So Cameron has two films that he's considering making, Alita Battle Angel or Avatar, and because it's his own idea, he plumps for Avatar. Now we get into one of my favourite stories in the history of moviedom. Casting. The studio, Fox, they wanted Matt Damon. So Cameron sits down with Matt Damon and says, I want you to do this movie. He actually said, his actual words were, I don't need anybody. I don't need a name for this or a named actor. If you don't take this, I'm going to find an unknown actor and give it to him because this movie doesn't really need you. But if you take the part, I'll give you 10% of the profits, which would have netted Matt Damon so far around $250 million.
Oh, my God.
And he said no. And he jokes about it. He said all this openly at a Ford versus Ferrari Q&A. He was like, yeah, I know. I, as an actor, I think I've left more money on the table than any other actor in history. So, yeah, Matt Damon said no. And then the studio went, Jake Gyllenhaal. And Jake Gyllenhaal went, no, I think I'm going to make the Prince of Persia instead. Nice one, Jake. So in the end, he went for Sam Worthington, which really worked for James Cameron because he said he wanted an unknown. He wanted a guy that you could have a beer with before transforming him into a leader. There's a very famous story about Sam Worthington living in his car when he was auditioning for Avatar. He was, but of his own choice. And he wasn't like down and out. And this wasn't his savior, this movie. He was a star in Australia at the time of auditioning for Avatar. He'd also auditioned to play James Bond for Casino Royale, lost out to Daniel Craig. I found a quote about the car story. And he says, I put myself there. Nobody else did. I did it. I wasn't struggling. I had a very successful career in my own country. I was just control deleting my life before someone else could fucking do it. No idea what that means. No idea. But I did once see him shouting into his phone outside a bar in New York, and it figures that he'd say something like, shut up, I'm fucking deleting my life. Like, what are you?
Well, I saw James Cameron talking about casting him, saying you have to believe that everyone would follow him. Sam Worthington was perfect, but he talked like Crocodile Dundee. Which I think is a bit disrespectful.
Well, Sam Worthington said it was easier learning Na'vi than it was learning an American accent for this movie.
Well, yeah, I don't think he did learn an American accent for this movie.
We've got Stephen Lang as Colonel Quaritch. Now, you watch Stephen Lang in this movie, and for me, he just screams James Cameron movie. Like, he is so perfect in a James Cameron movie. And lo and behold, I find out that he'd unsuccessfully auditioned for Aliens, from which Cameron had remembered him and sought him out for Avatar. It wasn't always going to be Stephen Lang. There was talk of it being Michael Biehn. Obviously Hicks, who from Aliens, he read the script, he saw some 3D footage, but he wasn't cast. And that was because Cameron cast Sigourney Weaver and then was like, I can't cast you as well, mate, because it would remind people of Aliens. Although he didn't say, I can't cast you as well, mate. Michael Biehn found out because his kid goes to the same school as producer John Landau's kid. And John Landau's kid told his kid, your dad ain't getting that job.
Wow. The Alien link as well is why that changed something else. I saw it's useful doing these Oscar films because there's all these very lengthy documentaries about the films we're doing this month on YouTube. And the Avatar one, you've got a lot of behind the scenes footage. And when they're doing, I think it's a table read, Sigourney Weaver's playing Grace Shipley. And Cameron says, yeah. So we've got to change your name because it's too similar to Ripley. So he tells her she's called Grace August, which is the first time she hears that. And it changes, I guess, at some other point to Grace Augustine.
So Cameron gets to work on the script and developing Pandora. The amount of time spent creating this world is A, pretty staggering, and B, way too much to go into detail on this show. So a few tidbits on the inspiration for the look of the Na'vi. It started with a dream his mother had when he was a kid about a 12-foot-tall blue woman, which he thought was a cool image. He then says in 76 or 77, he was writing his first screenplay, a big science fiction story, took place on multiple planets. At the end of the film was this planet with a native population that was 12 feet tall and blue and gorgeous. So I started to write Avatar. As to why, I don't know if you found this in your research or whether you were too overwhelmed by Dances with Wolves, Victoria, but as to why the Na'vi have breasts... This is quite an interesting story behind this.
Did you Google this, Alex?
I Googled it before, and the movie was a much more erotic experience as a result. Why the Na'vi have breasts? So they are non-placental animals, mammals. They are most likely egg-laying mammals. So James Cameron is on the actor's studio with James Lipton, who basically poses this question, sort of goes, then they would have no need for breasts. why do your Na'vi have breasts? And James Cameron says, because this is a movie for human people. He said a very different thing to Playboy magazine. He said, right from the beginning, I said she's got to have tits, even though that makes no sense to her race. What is it? What is it with filmmakers and actors? When they get interviewed, and musicians, something happens when you do an interview from Playboy. I swear, I have read more controversy from people who are otherwise non-controversial, saying the most absurd things for Playboy magazine. Gary Oldman's been in trouble for Playboy magazine. John Mayer's been in trouble for Playboy magazine. Do they just sort of go, it's Playboy magazine. If you don't say tits, we won't print it.
I guess it does tie in with the design of them, though, because the Na'vi were originally, they were reptilian when they first designed them. But it was sort of an off-putting look, and Cameron wanted them to be feline because he felt like people would want to be them if they were more cat-like. And I guess as well, reading between the lines, he thought that would be more sexy as well.
Sorry, did you just say you'd like to see a cat with breasts, Chris?
Cat tits.
Okay. Okay, I thought it already got weird enough, but clearly not. So James Cameron works with a fancy illustrator called Wayne Barlow and a concept artist called Jordu Shell to develop his Na'vi. I only mention this because they also both worked on Babylon 5 at various points, and Babylon 5's fucking awesome. And I hadn't thought about it in years, and I was like, oh, that was a great show. Right. The language, the Na'vi language, a communications professor, Paul Frommer, was brought on board to develop the language, and he was given this instruction from Cameron. Cameron wanted a language that was pleasant sounding and appealing to the audience. Frommer ended up creating about 1,000 words in Na'vi. And I mention this because he still gets emails from fans about expanding the language with their suggestions. I was just taken with that idea of whether it's like, oh, that's lovely, or whether that is like, drag bin. That was a long time ago. Control, Alt, Delete. So as Chris will no doubt be aware of being in the movie journalism industry, when it was revealed that Avatar was going to be in 3D, this was a big thing because 3D was still, it was a novelty. People hadn't talked about 3D since like Jaws 3D, for example, red and green glasses. But this was going to be something new and it was exciting. It was James Cameron. He was going to secretly, as the rumors go, delay the movie until all the cinemas had installed his 3D technology. And Avatar does have this legacy of creating a kind of short-lived 3D revolution, like where I certainly had a 3D TV for a while. A lot of people went, oh, great. Yeah. I bought a 3D TV. Well, Sky were like, we're launching Sky 3D, a 3D TV channel. We're going to start shooting the Premier League in 3D. There was this
and
huge...
And you love football. You love football, so that makes total sense.
It was such a novelty. Like, because what would happen is you had to charge the glasses anyway. So you charge these glasses. Have like 6 pairs of glasses charging around the house at any one time. People would come around, you go, look at Sky 3D. Oh, it's the David Attenborough insects documentary again. But put the glasses on. Put the glasses on. It's amazing. And people would be like, wow. Can I take them off now? Be like, Yeah, that was it. That cost me an extra £1,000 of technology there.
How effective was it at home, though? I mean, I guess it sounds like I know you haven't got it anymore. So was it just an annoyance? Was it uncomfortable wearing them for that period of time? Or
it's just simply the idea. It just doesn't naturally sit well with you sort of going to watch TV and having to put on a pair of glasses, because you watch TV when you're in and out of rooms, the TV's on, and it creates this weird formality to the viewing experience as opposed to just sitting and looking at someone and chatting. You've got this pair of glasses on. I mean, the effect was amazing. It was great. It just didn't work socially for the experience of watching TV. It felt
quite
strange.
So do you not like watching TV with people who just wear glasses normally then?
I've never had one in my house, Chris, so I couldn't tell you. But when I do, I'll let you know. No, because everyone's in glasses. It feels like because you put these glasses on, you can't then break away from the TV because it was very strange. I don't know. It'd be interesting to hear from people who had the 3D experience at home and why it didn't work, but it certainly didn't work because it all died a death and we don't talk about Sky 3D anymore at Sky Towers. But I think you touched on this, Chris. James Cameron didn't start out wanting to be a director. He started out wanting to be a special effects guy. And he couldn't afford to go to film school. So he taught himself the basics of effects work in movies by photocopying textbooks in a library while working as a trucker. And his first job was on the effects crew of Battle Beyond the Stars, which I'm sure you've mentioned on this show. Roger Corman's movie, Chris.
Yeah. So the cheap Star Wars knockoff that's actually quite good fun.
Yeah. And I was sort of reading around James Cameron. I'm going to get to the end of this text section soon because it just sounds... He's basically assembled a gang of inventors in Hollywood and they just all hang out coming up with crazy ideas for how to push the boundaries of cinema. Like one of his guys that he worked with on Ghosts of the Abyss, the Titanic documentary, it was him who he created the 3D camera with for that, that he'd then go on to develop and improve for Avatar. And
yeah, I look at it quite cynically sometimes, this film, and certainly doing the research as well. He said he was inspired because he was the CEO of a big visual effects company and wanted to challenge his employees to go further than anyone has gone before. So it was almost like the technology came before the story. And yeah, I'll talk about some of the other problems I have with it. But I question the what's behind this film.
Well, I can see where you're going to go with that. But I just raise you the point that James Cameron has, maybe this is personal to me, but watching Avatar at the cinema in 3D, sorry, Victoria, it was truly one of the most memorable moments of my adult cinema going life. It blew my mind. And I don't think I'm alone in that. And I think it's just so exciting to have a filmmaker who's going, all right, so that's cinema now. Here's cinema in 10 years. Here's cinema in 20 years. I'm so excited about what he's going to do with these sequels. I mean, I know there's been talk of glassesless 3D in the future, and I don't know how close we are to that.
Do you think he'll pay for me to have corrective surgery and then I can experience the full majesty of this?
If we all go and see Avatar 2, then I imagine he'll pay for everyone who can't enjoy 3D to be able to enjoy 3D.
Yeah, good. Okay.
Lots more tech stuff. Going to gloss over it now. Basically, the film is 70% digital, 30% live action, and performance capture was never the same again. Suffice to say, the film was a hit, obviously. It didn't win Best Pick. That went to Hurt Locker, directed by James Cameron's ex, Catherine Bigelow. That was an interest in Oscars. But it is the highest grossing film in history. And adjusted for inflation, the second highest grossing behind Gone with the Wind. It made $1 billion after only 19 days on release, which is insane. But then they hiked up the ticket prices for 3D. And this just annoys me. They hiked up the ticket prices for 3D. People went to see Avatar. People were like, it's worth it. This is incredible. And then literally the next film out of the blocks was Alice in Wonderland, which they converted to 3D to ride on Avatar's coattails. And literally the second film out of the blocks to already create this mistrust in an audience about 3D. And that just went from there, and it just went downhill because studios were a bit short-sighted, and instead of embracing this new technology and doing it properly, they went quick dollar, and that's why it died. Okay, rant over. Because this is an Oscar podcast, the final bit I'm going to mention is the Oscar skit we never saw, which is the Oscars where Avatar was up. Ben Stiller, do you remember Ben Stiller came on stage and he was dressed as a Na'vi? And it was kind of funny. The original gag was meant to involve Sacha Baron Cohen as well, where he'd come on as a pregnant female Na'vi and say he was carrying James Cameron's baby and confront him Jerry Springer style from the stage. The Oscars cut it because they thought Cameron would storm out. Right. Shall we talk about this movie right after this break?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This week at Sukarnov.
Over on Clash of the Titles, the gang are counting down to the Oscars with a special month of Best Picture clashes.
Rocky won the Oscar that year. Do you guys think it was a deserving winner that year, or do you think something else should have won?
I think Taxi Driver should have won.
I am with you, Vicky. My heart says Rocky. Rocky's one of my favourite films of all time. I don't like watching Taxi Driver, but it is.
No.
It is.
That's true.
It is amazing.
And that's so true. No one's ever like, oh, do you want a Bosch Taxi Driver?
Or if that doesn't tickle your fancy, and why wouldn't it, check out the Book Club on Football Ramble Presents, where former footballer Ricky Hill discusses the highs and lows of his storied career.
My schoolmaster came in afterwards and said, oh, you know, you've been invited, three of you have been invited for trials up at Luton. And I initially my thoughts were, where is Luton? I had no idea. and I said, well, I'm not going.
All that and a whole lot more.
Okay, so here we go with Avatar. The movie doesn't explicitly tell us the year, but it does take place in 2154, because that is the date on Jake Sully's video logs. Have either of you had a look at the original script for this movie?
No.
No. Oh, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mention it because it starts very differently. It begins with about eight scenes that are set on what reads like a very Blade Runner style Earth, and we actually meet Jake first of all on Earth. I'll just read you a bit. Jake stares upward at the levels of the city. Maglev trains whoosh overhead on elevated tracks against a sky of garish advertising. Most of the people wear filter masks to protect themselves from the toxic air. He gets in a fight in a dive bar protecting a woman whose boyfriend hits her, gets chucked out, and that's when the two dudes show up to tell him his brother's dead.
That's all shot, though, wasn't it? That was in the extended version.
Was it?
Yeah, I feel like I've seen all that. There's an early sequence on Earth that
I
is
never
completely...
saw that. I've never seen. Wait, how have I never seen the extended version?
I don't know, Alex. I can't answer all these questions.
That's insane. I've never seen the extended version, so I'm sorry. I'll let's crack on with the rest of the movie and ignore the fact that I need to watch the extended version. Okay, we're into the film proper now. I've divided it into sections, so you'll be pleased to hear, Chris.
Yeah.
Section one. It's great to narrate, yeah.
Oh, oh fucking hell. Oh,
so there's a lot of exposition delivered in narration in section one. This narration is still going on for 10 minutes from now in my section two when we arrive on Pandora. Orv, we all know you have a tempestuous relationship with narration. How did this sit with you?
This is bad voiceover. Very, very bad voiceover. Some of the worst. to establish stuff, I mean, I don't like it, but fine. It can be done brilliantly. See Goodfellas. But not to jump ahead to this section, but just to mention it because it's voiceover, there's a fucking scene later on after he's shagged Natiri and he wakes up in the tube and he goes, Jake, what the bloody hell do you think you're doing? In voiceover. Are you fucking kidding me? If Sam Worthington can't make a face that says regret, problems. It's just, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Unbelievable.
I'm going to counter that with, I think I didn't really mind it because when you've spent close to $500 million on effects that are going on around you to distract from the fact that most of the story is being told in narration, you kind of forget about it. But again, once again, you kind of need to see it in 3D. It grates more in the home viewing experience. But in 3D, that start when you're flying through space towards Pandora, you're like, oh my God, I don't care what's being said and who's saying it.
Yeah, okay. Fine. I was paying attention to the story, I suppose. like I said, that's a mistake.
Well, the story is that Jake Sully, a paraplegic former Marine whose scientist twin brother Tommy has been killed by a mugger for the paper in his wallet.
Sorry. It's just so like hammy. Like, what was it? So someone ended his life for the paper in his wallet. What should we talk about? Someone mugged your brother. Also, it's the future. Yeah. Why in the future have we dispensed with cremation curtains? Why can he see the box on fire? How cruel is that? Like, yeah. In the real world, they close curtains. Because it's mean. You don't want to see the box on fire.
And also, it's 2154. Who's carrying cash? Who's carrying cash?
But it wouldn't have been for the credits in his phone or whatever. Just, oh, dreadful.
Anyways, brother was a big financial asset to the Resources Development Administration because he was part of the Avatar program on Pandora and because Jake is his twin, genomes. So... So they pop him in a 6-year hypersleep and send him out to Pandora. And in case you wanted to know, Pandora is a densely forested habitable moon orbiting Polyphemus, a gas giant planet located in the Alpha Centauri system. And for reference, Endor is a densely forested habitable moon orbiting Tanna, a gas giant located in the Endor system. If George Lucas had made the Ewoks tall, blue, sexy aliens, do you think people would have had such a problem with the bloody Ewoks? And I say that as an Ewok defender.
It depends how they behave. They're quite annoying, aren't they? They're quite annoying.
I like Ewoks. The Ewoks. I do.
I love the Ewoks.
Yeah. Cute.
Yeah. Jedi is better than Empire. Have that. right. With regard to Sam Worthington's legs, considering the amount of CGI in the film, it's actually old school in-camera work that give us his legs. They're actual rubber prosthetics cast from the mold of a real paraplegic's legs, and his own legs are tucked under the chair. I did not know that when I was watching this. I thought, it's just all CGI. So, 4 minutes in, and because of how dense the exposition is, we're already on Pandora. 4 minutes and we're there. So, section two of 47. It's still great to narrate, yeah? we've got some more exposition now. Jake wheels himself onto the base. We find out these aren't Marines, but hired guns. One of them, who is a dick, sees Jake in his chair nearly get crushed by one of those walking machines and says something dickish. And because, give Cameron credit, he is a good writer, that same Marine will meet his own death being crushed while in one of those machines. I like that.
That's good.
Isn't it?
Is that obvious, or is that something you'd have to have seen it a couple of times to clock?
It was obvious to me this time. I mean, it's not too obvious, but it's just nice that's how he meets his
payoff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Loved it. We meet Colonel Quaritch giving his iconic speech about everything on Pandora wanting to eat your eyes for jujubes. Finally looked at what a jujube was. Never known before. I figured it was something squishy. Did you guys know?
No.
Yeah, they're just little sweetie beans, aren't they?
Are they sweet beans?
They are a Chinese date, the jujube fruit. But yeah, sweet beans do. Well done, Chris. That'll do. I'll take that. But yeah, it's the red or Chinese date. I do like that scene because it does set up how hostile Pandora is, which works for me. The arrows in the wheel of the truck, his scars down the side of his head, the speech. It's like, danger, danger. So let's fast forward to 10 minutes. And the narration ends because we now have video logs. That's the narration with. We've got a video log. We meet Sigourney Weaver's Dr. Grace Augustine. First of all, how many times do you think Sigourney Weaver has got out of a cryopod thing in her career?
Yeah, but I like that she sparks up as soon as she gets out.
It's so improbable that people are still smoking in 2150. And I say this as someone who likes smoking. Like, I'm not going to defend it, but I like it. And I'll be sad to see it go, but it is going. So I don't think it's going to be around.
Yeah. I don't like her introduction. I think the first words out of a character's mouth are really important. And
I hate
what's wrong with this picture. And then I hate where's my goddamn cigarette. And I hate the fact at which point a colleague, a scientist, who I'm pretty sure when they were studying at uni and then finally got their big job on Pandora, didn't think their job description would be fetching fags for their boss, who then doesn't say thanks at all.
Yeah, because she's like really salty and you can be that character. You'd be like, what's wrong with this picture? Where's my cigarette? Blah, blah, blah. But the first thing a character says establishes who they are in your mind. So then she needs to be this kind of arch and quippy and all of that. And she isn't really. Like she has a little bit of it later when she's injured and she's quite salty again. But for the rest of it, she's quite considered. She's a scientist. You know, she's...
Thing I politely disagree. I find this her opening here. Well, maybe you're right, but this opening for me, it makes me not like her. Like for the rest of the movie, I find her character throughout this movie quite dislikable to the point that I find her death totally unemotional as a sequence. And it's all because of this opening where she's just like she never really recovers from that. What's wrong with this picture? Which is not a great line to start with. It's like ugh,
yeah.
And I just I think it does her a disservice as a character and as an actress. The cigarette in question is completely CGI. It's not a real cigarette she's smoking.
Don't lie.
100% on the Blu-ray extras, which I watched, she's just puffing away on nothing. They added it in afterwards.
I can't tell if you're lying. It's upsetting me. Okay.
I'm genuinely not. Why do you think I'd lie about that?
To make yourself laugh.
No, it is. It is a completely CGI cigarette because I think they were inside the giant dome in which he shoots all this CGI stuff. So you can't actually smoke in there because there are other actors around and what have you.
Yeah.
Interestingly, the film was criticised for her smoking because environmental scientists apparently don't usually smoke.
No.
Yeah. This is there was a lot of criticism about the fact her doctor, her botanist smokes, and Cameron did an interview with Wired magazine and says, from a character perspective, we were showing that Grace doesn't care about her human body, only her avatar body, which again is a negative comment about people in our real world living too much in their avatars, meaning online and in video games.
Yeah, but he's also just made a huge movie with a strong environmental message. It's all about selling toys and creating a theme park, which completely contradict that environmental message.
Oh, you are a bit cynical about this film, aren't you, Chris? We're on our last leg of the exposition setup now. Giovanni Ribisi, who I wish... I'm going to not finish that sentence until I understand Vicky. Oh.
I love him. I would watch him do anything. Yep. So he's got the "this rock pays for everything" exposition. What the fuck? First of all, what the fuck? Second of all, why are you telling Sigourney Weaver? She fucking knows that. She's been there for years. You've got a new guy in the corner. Do the "this rock pays for everything" exposition with him because he can conceivably not know that, although it seems ridiculous. Also, "this rock pays for everything." He's like, "that'll do." It's like, what is it? What does it pay for? What does it do? Is it energy? I'm assuming it's energy, or is it not?
It's a superconductor at room temperature, Victoria. It's a superconductor, which is kind of special. I'm not gonna go into it. There's a lot of science in this movie, and there's a lot about the science of Avatar and whether it's right or not. And I still can't say unobtainium without laughing. I think it's my favourite thing, unobtainium. I think it's great. I liked Giovanni Ribisi in this because he's Burke from Aliens, and I love that character. Just a sort of a more moral Burke from Aliens, but yeah, he's great. So we find out they're on the brink of war. There's going to be military action if Grace's Avatar program doesn't find a peaceful solution, which is by them using their Avatar bodies to make friends with the natives. Now, I have a really big question here for you guys. Do you think disguising yourself as another species in order to befriend them is the right way to do it, to put these people at ease by looking exactly like them without being them? Or do you think that's a proper "they live" fucking freaky situation that would make anyone uneasy?
It's crackers. Because also, I'm not sure the Na'vi, I missed it, but they don't really ever reference it. They've got this idea about like dream walkers and demons and things like that, but no one goes, "whoa, you're not actually you. Like, that's mad that you've turned up here like that." Like, you've gone to so much trouble. There's that competing with the idea that, given that, what's he called, Colonel, General Badass, or whoever he is?
Quaritch,
coupled with Giovanni Ribisi's character, and also with the real world, I don't believe for one second that they wouldn't have just been like, "bang, they're gone, I'll have my rock, bye." I don't believe there would be any diplomatic effort. And that is a failure of the script to make me believe that the diplomacy would be a preferred route. There's a stupid speech later where he's like, "I tell you what shareholders don't like, they don't like bad press." And it's like, why don't they like bad press? You're millions of miles from anywhere. Who's going to even know what you do? But also, tell me why shareholders don't like bad press. Tell me the reason. And there's the other thing they don't like is no money. And it's like, well, I get that, but it's so lazy.
I think a lot of films do it in reverse, Alex, if you want to put us in their shoes. Like, I'm just trying to think off the top of my head. The Last Starfighter does it, Cocoon does it, where the aliens think we won't want to engage with them if they're in their alien form, so they disguise themselves as humans.
Yeah. No, fair point. I take that on board. Section 3. Welcome to the jungle! If you're worried that we're only on section 3, things speed up because the second half of the film is a lot of montages. Jake is part of the Avatar program now, but he's got a secret meeting with Quaritch to work as a spy for him and find the Na'vi's weaknesses. Now, Jake seems really keen to do this, despite just kind of making friends with the scientists and finding out that it's really great for him to be an Avatar. He's totally like, "I will definitely be your snitch." And this is even before Quaritch goes, "well, sorry, I was going to offer you your legs back. So maybe wait for that bribe, be a bit reluctant, and then I offer you that." And then you're like, "yeah, okay, now I'll do it." Because otherwise, you just seem like a bit of a dick I can't wait to pull one over on these guys.
Well, no, he loved being a Marine, and then he stopped being a Marine because of what happened to him. And this is his opportunity to be a Marine again. So I think that's fair enough as his reasons for working with him so readily, even though it's, you know, not the most pleasant of missions he's being asked to carry out.
Okay. That's 2 for 2, Chris. I take that on board as well, and I like it. Good work. So Jake heads into the jungle, gets attacked and left behind by his team who can't find him. I got a third problem here. See if you can go 3 for 3 on this, Chris. This is my new problem. For all the bloody exposition, How have they not managed to set up the rules for Avatar piloting? So everyone's worried about Jake being alone in the forest and being killed, but it is not explained. If you die as your avatar, do you die in the real world or do you just wake up? And if you just wake up, then why are they so concerned? And is it just because the avatar's expensive and they don't mention that because that's not really going to appeal to an audience to worry as much?
I agree. There's a grey area there, isn't there? It's because the Matrix makes it very clear what the rules are, whereas here, when Joel David Moore's character Norm, it's not really clear what's up with him when he's injured on Pandora, and then when he comes out, he seems like he's a bit struggling, but he's not dead, and he's going to be fine. I 100% agree. You need to tell us what the rules are because they seem to want to have it both ways throughout this film.
Okay, good. Back on track. So then we've got Jake meeting Neytiri, or Jack meeting Rose Mark II. She saves him from a bunch of Pandora whippets that she has to kill. Now, you know, I don't like animals dying in movies anyway, but when they actually look like my dog, I'm like, come on, this is not cool. This is not nice. And then it's fucking whimpering and she stabs it. And I was like, this is so awful. What I do like is how much time is spent by Neytiri pointing out that she doesn't want to have to kill it. And it's because Jake is a baby. You're a baby. Love it.
You like doing this accent, don't you?
I love it when she goes, you're like a baby. It's great. So this was the footage where she puts out the torch and the forest lights up. Like I said, I saw in the first 50 minutes, and I think this is just incredible, Victoria, in 3D. Oh.
I mean, it's good in 2D. I really like it. It made me want to go out, like, because it looks like a brilliant, brilliant club. But in 2D, it was fine. I would love to see it in 3D. there you go.
We've got a really similar beat here as a character, wind in his hair, kind of lifted from Dances with Wolves. Tute, the fearsome warrior who doesn't like Jake but grows to love Jake, he turns up at this point. As it turns out, warriors get a Na'vi pass in a way that scientists don't, because despite all the work that the scientists have done, Jake goes, I'm a warrior. And they go, welcome to the tribe.
Let's teach you everything about us.
Hope for the best.
Which in one of the film's underdeveloped storylines really pisses off Norm, the scientist, who then later just stops being pissed off with some narration which goes, Norm's forgiven me.
Oh dear.
All right, section 4. I was running out of steam at this point. Section 4. Na'vi, Avi, have I ever felt so rad? I'll do it again. Na'vi, Avi, have I ever felt so rad? It's all science, never ever.
All science. All science. Got it.
All right, good. Basically, it's Jake being a Na'vi and feeling rad. Jake Sully rides a dire horse. Jake Sully fires arrows. Jake Sully falls out of trees. I will say, when they climb up the mountains, the floating mountains, even without 3D, that bit where they jump onto the vines when they're going to find a banshee for him, my stomach turned from the vertigo. I was like, that's good.
It looks amazing.
It does. All right, so that is the end of that section. I told you the sections would get faster. So after the disaster that was the title of section 4, welcome to section 5. Flight of the Navigator.
Whoa. Oh. 5 out of 5.
Yep. Jake gets his own banshee. Cue a flying montage, which potentially might be too long. Without 3D, I honestly think a shorter home viewing version should have been done, because without the 3D, just like all right, flying again, all right. Little bit about the banshees. I quite like the banshees, so I'll tell you about the banshees. So the creation of the banshee draws inspiration from a load of things: poison dart frogs, tropical reef fish, the head of a barracuda, and my favourite, a car. Genuinely, he was like, all these animals and cars. We took the Go Faster stripes off a car. and the noise it makes is literally borrowed from Jurassic Park. It's the T-Rex sound. Now, the main points we're learning here is we learn about the holy site, the Tree of Souls, which will definitely come up again. Sigourney Weaver has the most on-the-nose piece of dialogue in the movie when she says of the Tree of Souls, I would die to get samples. Then there is an absolutely bonkers decision to have the flying animal, Taruk, attack Jake in a surprise attack maneuver. Honestly, I couldn't believe it. So this Taruk, it's like the big bird and the dragon thing in the sky, and it's going to attack Jake, and he's flying along unaware. And before it attacks, it's prefixed with the narration that goes, turns out I'm not the biggest thing in the sky. You're like, right, so something's going to attack him. Brilliant. Where's the shock? Where's the surprise? There. I'd love to have seen that scene shot where you're just like, duh, 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 everything. Whoa! I couldn't believe it. That broke me a little bit because I was really riding this wave of like good feeling. And then I was like, oh, come on. God, don't say there's an attack coming from above, viewer. Right. Then we get the scene that was cut from the theatrical release, which is Na'vi sex, put back in for the home release. I did think when he goes to kiss her, it's a good job that the Na'vi kiss like humans. Otherwise, it would have been like my first kiss, where she goes, what are you doing?
What did he say?
Whereabouts were you? And I don't mean geographically. Where were you?
You do mean geographically.
What did you do wrong, Alex?
Oh, it's just, you know, you watch a lot of movies as a kid and your first kiss comes along and you're like, right. So you just jam the tongue in. And jam it in there. Get as far in as possible. That's the way it is. What are you doing?
All right. Would you shag a Na'vi?
Well, to quote James Cameron, they gotta have tits. So yeah. Things go bad now in section six, which I'm calling Jake Sullied the Relationship. Nothing's. I'm just going to give you a heads up, Chris. Nothing is going to beat Flight of the Na'vi Gator.
No, it's fine. So, no, I was more. I was more about what Jake does. But I like your title. It's fine.
Oh, okay. So yeah. Why don't you tell me what you don't like about what Jake does?
I think he's running scared because he's got his Na'vi shag that he wanted, and she says, "I'm with you now, Jake. We are mated for life."
Yeah, and he's like, "Oh fuck,
oh bollocks, yeah. Oh bollocks."
That's what he's like. What the hell are you doing? He's like, "Oh whoa, no, that's
you
not
offered,
no."
You offered
no.
me the best singer and the best hunter. I should have gone with one of them. Wesley Oda Lewis.
Yeah, I'm not ready for a long term relationship right now. I need to do some work on myself, and I wouldn't want to involve you in that.
Yeah. Well, things aren't going well. Quaritch finds out that Jake Sully is a traitor. Neytiri finds out that Jake Sully is a traitor. There is a great moment here where Grace says to Quaritch, what are you going to do? Shoot me, Ranger Rick. And the look that he gives her when he says, I could do that. You see for the first time that he's actually kind of insane. I really love the look he gives because he's like a little man. He's been made to look little and he's like, I could shoot you though. I reckon I could. It's really good. And then we get the big moment of the Na'vi's home tree being destroyed. A little bit of denial here, I feel, from Jake because the home tree is on fire behind him. And in narration, Jake says, I was a warrior who dreamt I could bring peace. And you're like,
when?
You did tell Quaritch where the load-bearing structures of that tree that's on fire behind you were. So, yeah. I mean, that's your story and you can have it, but probably don't tell anyone else. Section seven, Trudy, 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 Trudy! Kaiser Chiefs. Judy. No.
Yep, yep.
All right. Michelle Rodriguez, very little to do now, rescues the team. The good guys are rallying. Jake is going to show the Na'vi that he's the one who can unite all the tribes. He'll become the Taruk Rider of Legend. We get a very cool entrance when he arrives riding the Taruk. Note to everyone, if you ever, through your actions, lead to the death of your partner's father, all you need to do is arrive on a massive dragon and she will not only forgive you, but will apologize to you for being angry in the first place. Fucking amazing.
Oh my God. I just didn't see it. I was too busy being angry about that it's him. But she's like, my grandfather's father or whatever tamed the last dragon. I was like, I bet it's going to be this guy then, which is so bad that it's him and it's not one of the other warriors, even though he can have a hand in the story. But I forgot she was, yeah, she's just like, oh God, I'm sorry about that.
I was angry. I was scared is what she said. I was angry. I was scared. He's like, I mean, he can't say it, but he's pretty much like, don't worry about it. Got him.
We all made mistakes.
Got a massive dragon now. Yeah, so
consider it forgotten.
I guess you want to be with me again. Of course you do. Of course you do. That's my dragon right over there. The biggest one. It's the biggest dragon. That's mine.
You've also got some political stuff happening here, I think, as well, because this was sort of being made in the shadow of the second Iraq war. Mm. And so you've got lines like he's talking about when people are sitting on shit you want, you make them your enemy, then hit them with everything you've got. He's talking about the campaign being shock and awe. You've got some 9/11 imagery as well with the tree going down, everyone running away from it. I think it was definitely trying to mirror what was happening in the news at the time.
Yeah, and I think that's a really, I really like Cameron for that. I think that's a really sort of, you know, he's making this huge, it's cost $500 million, he's making this huge movie, and yet he's not afraid to put a statement like that in it. And it was intentional. He says, in reference to the term they use, shock and awe, we know what it feels like to launch the missiles. We don't know what it feels like for them to land on our home soil, not in America. Which he obviously got some criticism for from certain corners of America. And he responded with, I think it's very patriotic to question the system that needs to be corralled. So he was very outspoken.
I think I said this on the Aliens episode as well. He does seem to be someone who adores military hardware, but then doesn't like it being used.
Yeah, but he shoots it so well, as we're going to find out in Section 8. That's Quaritch coming for you. It was late. It's Rich coming from you. That's Quaritch coming for you.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
It didn't scan. Basically, this is the final battle, which for me is just a joy to watch. And I loved it again, this time not in 3D, because it's James Cameron once again proving that he's one of the, if not the world's greatest action director. It is a phenomenal piece of cinema.
Yeah, it's very interesting watching it, having just done the Snyder movie and seeing someone who's a master at action versus someone whose action I do not care for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the physics and the spatial awareness and just the visual storytelling all seems very joined up here.
All of that, and also the moments. It's just the little lines that help sell these things. I mean, first of all, it's the fact that the action is completely connected to the story and character. I mean, James Cameron said himself, "I'll go to a Transformers film for the fun of seeing the spectacle, but personally, my soul craves a little more story, a little more meat on the bone and characters and that sort of thing." And that's what this battle is. The right people get killed, and you actually see them die, like the guy at the start, the Dick Marine who gets crushed by the stampede. You've got those great little lines in, "All right, ladies, let's bring the pain." And the bit where they fall out of the ships in the walkers and someone goes, "We're going to lose some paint in here." I just love those little bits of military jargon. And the battle doesn't scrimp on showing us some actual death, which I thought it would, being like a kid's movie. I was like, people get spit pierced like by massive arrows. Like, people die. If I had to pick My favourite moment, it's Michelle Rodriguez's arrival when she strafes Quaritch's ship and says, "You're not the only one with a gun, bitch."
Do you think they cast her because we don't have time to do any character development for your character, any backstory? Everyone loves Lottie in Fast and Furious, so just come in, play Lottie, and it'll be fine.
I think so, because I don't know what her deal is. Why is she helping the other side? Why? Like, why is she risking everything? And she turns up, she tries to kill her boss, and obviously she's going to die. What is it about that that's worth dying for to her? No idea.
Now, there are some lovely moments. I say lovely, just like quite affecting moments in this battle. Neytiri's banshee dying got me. Seeing a dire horse on fire running through the forest, that was affecting stuff. I will say one thing. For all Jake Sully embracing Na'vi culture, it is very useful in this battle that he has a gun and some grenades. Super useful.
But also, do you not feel a bit cheated? There's a bit before the battle where he goes to the tree, the big tree, whatever that's called.
The tree of souls.
And he kneels in front of it and he says, "Ugh, I'm probably just talking to a tree." And you think, would you really think, after everything you've been through and everything you've seen and everything you've done, you don't just think you're talking to a tree. You can sense the power of this thing. And it's really disrespectful to be like, "Oh, a bit embarrassing, but yeah, I'm going to talk to a tree." I just didn't believe it.
Yeah. There's a nice setup and payoff earlier on. We've seen Neytiri teaching him to use leaves to break his fall, which he doesn't quite manage to do. Here he survives a fall using the same leaf technique. But they're going to lose. The good guys are going to lose. And then Enya finally gets her shit together and answers Jake's prayer and sends all the animals of Pandora into battle, and they win. And Neytiri kills Quaritch. And it's just pretty, pretty great. Then the end is Jake permanently becoming a Na'vi. And then we're done. Cue truly awful Leona Lewis song, "I See You." So that's the main part of the movie. A little bit of, obviously, there's a little more to it. The next section is just called Leona Lewis, "I See You." In Ireland, "I See You" debuted at number 47 for the week of the 15th of January 2010. It did make its way onto the United States US Adult Contemporary chart, where it peaked at number 24. Do you know what PAD is?
No.
So this is a real thing that happened after Avatar, which was post-Avatar depression, that people reported seeing this movie at the cinema and they loved Pandora so much. Sorry, Victoria, they'd seen it in 3D. They loved Pandora so much that they wanted to be there forever, despite knowing it wasn't real. Which it was a real thing, a big thing at the time. People fell in love with this movie.
Alex, I don't think it was a big thing at the time.
There was a lot of people talking about it.
It's a dumb news story that was spun out on a slow news day.
Chris, as a pad sufferer myself, I don't appreciate your tone. Now, you're a fan of theme parks, Chris. Have you actually been to Pandora, the world of Avatar?
I have not. I've heard it's spectacular, but I have not. Have you?
I have not. I looked it up on TripAdvisor to sort of see some reviews. Yeah, it looks all right. A lot of people are moaning about the length of queues, normal, in a theme park. Mike said two attractions, one being a small, boring boat ride that Disney spared expenses on, overpriced gift shop and restaurant, round out this tiny land, one star. So Mike didn't like it.
Well, I think the idea was for, you know, the sequels to be out by the time the theme park opened. And obviously that didn't all happen. Who knows when these sequels will ever see the light of day.
Well, it's funny you say that, because that's what I'm going to talk about next, these sequels. You're right. So the park opened in 2017 and the sequels were originally due. Avatar 2 was due in 2014 and Avatar 3 in 2015. So it looks like they are definitely coming now, and they are definitely coming on definite dates. Because I don't know whether you've looked at all the photos of Avatar 2 that they were doing, all the performance capture underwater. It sounds I can't believe Kate Winslet, after everything that she went through on Titanic and all the famous horror stories about that movie, went, cool, so this new Avatar is under the water and it's you, James Cameron, and me again. Excellent.
Maybe she's,
I'm on
maybe
board.
She spoke to Matt Damon.
Yeah, because they're doing performance capture underwater. It sounds crazy. Apparently, Kate Winslet can now hold her breath for 7 minutes and 14 seconds underwater, which she's been required to do for this role. But yeah, the Avatar sequels are coming. Avatar 2 is the 16th of December 2022, Avatar 3, 2024 in December. And then depending on how those do, it's all very sketchy, you know what they're like. But it's like, if they do well, Avatar 4 and 5 will come out. If they don't, then they won't. What do you think the anticipation levels are like? Because I've always said, I cannot believe he's left it this long. I don't think that people are going to be that interested. But genuinely, rewatching it for this show, I'm like, oh, I think they might be, you know. If he re-releases it in 3D, sorry, Victoria, again, beforehand in the UK, like he's done in China, it will reignite people's interest.
Yeah, I mean, you said you're still excited, but I mean, I genuinely could not care less. But equally, I can remember in 1997, we all laughed at James Cameron. And then when Avatar got delayed, we all laughed at James Cameron. He's always right. He always proves us wrong. They will make $2 billion each. So, and I'll probably go and see it. So, you know, I can't really talk shit.
Yeah, well, you spoke for me, but I am excited. You're absolutely right. I am very, very excited. And I'm just interested to know what he's got up his sleeve, because I think after all this time, there must be something else he's going to do. Like what he did with 3D, with Avatar, I think there's going to be something.
Well, Sigourney Weaver and Stephen Lang are in it, which is interesting.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, Stephen Lang.
Two dead characters.
Yeah, I'm not sure Sigourney Weaver's playing the same character. I mean, it's all the rumor mill right now. Like, I don't know. But Stephen Lang seems like, apparently he's going to be the villain right through to Avatar 5. And he's all like, yeah, he's changed. He's different. He's a different guy. It's like, oh, okay. How is this news? All right. I think I'm done.
Did anyone else watch Fern Gully in the run-up to this?
No, I haven't seen it for years.
I watched it for the first time. Yeah. Yeah, there are similarities. It's all about, I mean, it's fairies rather than Na'vi, but everything else is the same. They're tree spirits nurturing all living things, and they worship an enchanted tree, and the hero gets turned into one of them and gets taught how to listen to the forest and hear what the forest has to say while he's surrounded by lots of bioluminescence. And when the humans attack, he's telling the tribe they have to leave because they're going to be killed by the humans, but they insist on staying. And then he spends the climax saving them all by flying on the back of a bat rather than a banshee. The only major difference really is that at the end he goes back to man rather than Jake Sully staying with the Na'vi, which so I think I feel like that story beat Avatar got right.
Well, I've never seen Fern Gully, so
you don't have to now.
Okay, that's great. I've been on that journey.
Well, I'll ask my Oscar question then. So Avatar didn't win. It was up against The Blind Side, Inglourious Bastards, up in the Air, District 9, An Education, Precious, A Serious Man, and the winner, The Hurt Locker. A couple of other ones I like that year, Moon and A Prophet. What should have won that year? Should Avatar have been victorious?
No.
Alex, Vicky. Well, do you think Hurt Locker was the correct winner that year?
I haven't
Vicky?
Seen it, but I love the fact that it's his ex. So.
It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm in it for that because she just wasn't like, yes.
Yeah, that was a lot of narrative around that Oscar year was who would win.
Excellent. So, best scene, Chris?
In the cinema, I really enjoyed the Banshee flying sequence, even though it's much too long watching at home. At home watching it, I think when giant Neytiri's cradling baby Jake at the end, that shit's hilarious. That really made me laugh.
That's the opposite of sexy.
It's so ridiculous. Yeah, such really a weird image. But yeah, I couldn't stop laughing when I saw that. So yeah, go for that.
All right, Victoria, best scene.
I like when we get to see the forest at night. So after Neytiri has saved Sully from the whippets and it glows up, and even though I'm getting the poorer experience because of a condition that I have no control over, It was amazing. So that.
Mine is the battle at the end. I'm not going to divide it into bits because it just works as a whole. It's James Cameron doing what James Cameron does best, which is amazing action. Victoria, who is your, or what is your MVW?
It's Zoe Saldana as Neytiri. I think she's so good. And I say that not really having loved this film. The way she plays that woman, she's really... what's the right word? Really comfortable with her emotions. She has like temper tantrums, but she's not childish, and she's really expressive, but she's still physically powerful. Like, if you were rescued by her, you'd be like, brilliant, like someone competent has turned up to rescue me from these dogs and all the rest of it. But she still seems, she just plays it with enough vulnerability, but also like she's rock hard as well. I think she's really, really honestly good.
Okay, Chris?
Zoe Saldana as Neytiri.
Wow. For the same reasons?
Yeah, why not?
All right. James Cameron, because everything.
Because you're on fucking commission. I swear to God.
Honestly, I think he's... I mean, he hasn't made a bad film, in my opinion. He's like, he makes amazing films and he pushes the boundaries and, like, there are moments. And Aliens. So I don't need any more. Aliens is enough of an answer. So I'm not even going to go into all my reasons why this is great in terms of what he's done. But Aliens. So there you go. What would you change, Chris?
I mean, ideally, you'd let these people tell their own story, but sort of by doing it through Jake, you've got this white saviour and you deny them their agency, and hopefully that's something they fix in the sequel. So I don't know how you'd fix it here. I don't know if you maybe make him a Native American person, examine what happened to his people to give it more resonance. I mean, obviously, you don't want to exploit or belittle that real-world tragedy, but the parallels they draw aren't exactly subtle in the movie anyway. So I don't know if that would make it more interesting, or recast Jake, really. I don't find him very likable in this film. And I think that's a real problem. I don't know if that's the writing or the performance, or, you know, if it was an actor that I liked a bit more naturally, if it would work better. But yeah, just something, do something about that, our hero.
But do you not agree with Cameron? You could go for a beer with him, couldn't you, Chris?
Yeah, but that's a different. They're two completely different things, though. I could go for a beer with you, but I wouldn't want to see you in a film.
Well, I haven't told people about that yet, so keep it on the down low. But when it comes out, I'll let you know. You'll hear it here first. Victoria, what would you change?
When Jake Sully is recruited by those two dudes that are like, your brother's on fire. So it's inconceivable to me that they wouldn't fix his spine. They're like, oh yeah, but you get paid loads of money if you go to Pandora, but we're not going to offer to fix your spine. So they fix it, right? But being inside the tube thing that makes him become an avatar weakens the surgery he's had. So the longer he stays as an avatar, the fix that they've done on his spine deteriorates. So his decision to stay as an avatar costs him something in his real human body life. And then you get to a climax where he's told, if you go back in that tube one more time, the surgery will fail forever and you can never have it again. So he has to make a choice. Do you make a life for yourself back on Earth, which is what you set up that he's wanted and wanted for ages, or do you risk all of that and go back for love?
Wow, that's nice. I like that a lot. My change would quite simply be you can't have narration throughout a film. Like you just can't, because the whole thing feels like a flashback and it robs it of any urgency whatsoever. And it's not a flashback. It's not Jake retelling a story from later in his life, as far as I can tell. Like you're supposed to be there in the moment and just going, turns out I'm about to be attacked by a giant dragon just before a dragon attacks you is ridiculous. So that. Right then. That's us done on Avatar. Thank you. Let's do the verdict.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
Right then. These were Christopher's choices. So, Christopher, who do you want to go first?
Oh, I forgot they were my choices. Let's do Vicky first.
So I'll be quick. It's been a bit of a tough week. I didn't love seeing Avatar again, but it was because it was like I had my heart broken all over again. Because the first time I was like, oh fuck, the 3D thing's not going to work for my stupid eye. And then the second time I was like, well, maybe it's actually just a good film. Oh no, fuck, it's not. So that was annoying. And then Dances with Wolves, I did find hard going. That's on me though, because of my hangover. So it's just going to be a real sort of splitting hairs thing, which it comes back to your change, Alex. I cannot cope with the narration. I can't forgive it. I think it's insulting. So I can't give Avatar my choice because it's, yes, I can't. It doesn't sit well. So by default, Dances with Wolves.
One for Dances with Wolves. Right.
Alex, yeah. You're up next.
Thank you. Not actually a tough one for me this week. If I might paraphrase the great Quint from Jaws, you all know the kind of movies I like. I enjoyed Dances with Wolves. I feel it's deathly slow at times. And it's not just that I like big, unsubtle filmmaking. I think Dances just labours its points a bit. I can't be bothered. It's Avatar. Avatar is my vote.
Okay.
Comes down to you, Chris. You love it when it's your choices and you get to make the decision.
You always say that and I don't.
You love this. You bloody love it.
I like it when I really want one to win over the other, but I don't like it when I'm as indifferent as I am this week. But I haven't rewatched Avatar since I saw it because nothing about it made me want to revisit it. It was utterly overwhelming in the cinema. That 3D was great, as Vicky said. Mm-hmm. Superficially, it does everything a film's supposed to, but the characters are all pretty one-dimensional, which I think is a real problem. That said, I don't know if I've become less patient or tolerant, but I struggle with the length of Dances in a way that I didn't in the early 90s when I was 12. but although I don't like the length, I actually quite like the pace of Dances with Wolves because I think it does immerse you and acquaint you with the pace of that life that he would have been living at the time. And I think there's a purity to the way John Dunbar makes that connection and sees the humanity of the people he's living with. And I find that spellbinding and I see it as much more cynical the way it unfolds in Avatar. So for those reasons, I'm voting for Dances with Wolves.
Ooh. What on earth is happening? I mean, I really wish I'd finished my pitch because it might have swayed you. I was going to say Avatar is like it's seeing it in the cinema in 3D, and I'm gonna say it, truly one of the most momentous viewing experiences of my adult life. And yes, it doesn't hold up on the small screen, and yes, the story could do with a bit of work, and yes, don't narrate what is happening just before it happens.
Why is it, Alex, why is it left no cultural footprint in spite of the fact they made a million toys and they've opened a theme park?
Yeah. Because you, without the 3D, it's not the same movie. It would be like listening to Bohemian Rhapsody without the drums. Like, or it would be like
it's because the characters no one wants to dress up as them, no one cares about them. I think that's okay. The problem
in a serious way, just to be serious for a moment, it's that thing of like the reason the storytelling is so unsubtle is because people needed a very simple story, I believe, at that time to accustom themselves to like the way they were being stimulated visually by this film. And so it had to be broad strokes because we were just sort of like sitting there going, what am I watching?
But so, you can have a Han Solo, can't you? Or you can have a Luke Skywalker. These characters that you fall in love with as soon as you meet them. I just didn't really feel like that happened here. Yeah. I'm not here to debate it anyway. I'm trying to reason with you because you're getting upset. You're having one of your verdict meltdowns.
I'm not having a meltdown.
It's because of his James Cameron commission. It's now under threat. He's going to be on the phone to him going like, I promised you 10% of Avatar 2 if you could constantly go on about how fucking brilliant I am. But Chris and Vicky haven't bought it this week.
James, I'm sorry. That is us done for this week. But let's look ahead to next week. Victoria, it's your choices next week. Give us a clue. And then tell us what they are.
I could do that. The clue was the man, the myth, the legend. And so, Alex, you're watching Forrest Gump, and Chris, you're watching Big Fish.
Ooh. Okay. Right. Forrest Gump versus Big Fish. I like it. Right, that is your homework then for the weekend. Forrest Gump and Big Fish, have a feel-good weekend. If you haven't already, do please subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can follow us on Twitter at ClashPod, on Instagram at ClashPod. Back on Monday talking about Forrest Gump. Bye-bye.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.